Hi, I'm John.
Hi, I'm Olivia.
And hi, I'm Alex.
And this week we've watched Author, Author. And now we're going to argue about whether it's going to make us quit Star Trek.
I don't like the energy EMH brought me today. I can see the social justice cause within this, but he was acting like a guy who just read David Foster Wallace and thought he was a genius.
It's a
Like,
little
the
bit.
energy he gave was terrible.
It's an awfully mean-spirited episode.
We're meant to sympathize with him, and they start us off by just making him look like a complete twat.
Yes.
And he never really learns his lesson for being a complete twat. Except to have all of his rights removed as an individual, which is not actually how that's meant to work.
Yeah.
First of all, I would have ended all of this by getting an injunction taken out against him. So it would have been fine for me.
They may I really hate it when they make characters purposefully idiots for story reasons, and they made the doctor an idiot in this episode to make the whole thing work, and
Well, I
it's
they didn't even need to
terrible.
do it for it to work.
Right.
So he hasn't become a megalomaniac, as we were telling me. Because this is season seven. This is three seasons ahead of me. I just thought he became a dick, and that was his
I feel
character.
like
He's.
no, this episode is really, this is like season one Doctor, right? Like if they had done this episode in season one, obviously it wouldn't be the same construction because of the whole communicating with Earth thing. But if they'd done it with the personality he displayed in season one, where he was a huge dick, then okay, like more acceptable. But the fact that when you locate it within the arc of the character where he does become this like happier, more mellow, more normal,
Yeah, I thought they were
person,
friends.
yeah,
What happened?
it's a total like weird tonal shift reset back to the Doctor who doesn't get it, and like coming right at the end of the season, right at the end of the show, and this being like the last, well, no, there is actually one more Doctor episode, but like this being one of the last Doctor episodes, it's like such a shame for me.
What a send-off.
You know, it's like you've been doing you. What is so you're watching through Star Trek in chronological order?
Yes, in universe chronological order
Which means you've just
by
passed
season.
by seasons. So you've piled through Voyager.
Yep.
When I text you about this, you said, I like Voyager, but all I remember from Twitter of it is every time you finish an episode going, what did I just watch?
There was so yes, so I love Voyager. I don't love portions of season seven, and if I really don't like when I don't like Voyager, I really don't like it. When I like it, I really like it. But it's one of those shows where like, and the seventh season particularly for me just goes off the rails pretty quickly. There are a few really good standout episodes, but there are just also a bunch that are just like not very good at all.
So Voyager is basically fine, or it breaks your soul, which.
Well, it worse than that. It's either excellent or it breaks my soul, and like, and there's nothing in between.
In my mind, that's high praise, just for Voyager. I'm like, that's
Yeah,
actually, they're doing well. Good for them.
I would venture a guess that I am probably the biggest Voyager fan on this show at the
No, that's absolutely me.
moment. I don't hate Voyager. It just baffles me how little they do with the concept when it's all there in front of them.
Yes.
It's a bit like somebody who walks into like a craft beer like place, looks at all that's on offer and orders a Stella.
Yes. Yeah. I will never argue with anybody who says I dis I, one of the reasons why Voyager does not work for me is because it did absolutely nothing with the concept that it created, right? Because it really does not do almost anything with that concept at all. But for me, I'm just like, I'll set that aside. I'm gonna see the show as it is. I have a great time, right? Like, you know, a lot of the episodic stuff. It's got some really great episodes, some great two-parters, but it also has some really bad episodes. And for me, this is one of them.
You know, you, for those who know, Alex is a major contributor to Trekcore and you run Weekly Trek, and you know, you'd hope that you enjoyed Star Trek. So I'd hope you would be able to get through Voyager. because it's not kind of Arith's
whole
gig. Are
you saying struggling to get through Voyager makes me less of a Star Trek fan, John? Because I'll be honest,
I'm trying to segue to questions here, Olivia, and you're not.
Well, okay. I took personal offense, and now we're going to talk about me for a bit.
So, Alex, when did you first watch Star Trek?
I first watched Star Trek on BBC Two in, it must have been 91 or 92, maybe 93. I remember the episode. I came home after Beavers and I turned on the television and I flipped to BBC Two and the last 10 minutes of A Matter of Time was playing, the Berlinguer Rasmussen Next Generation episode from the fifth season.
And Star Trek insults historians once again episode.
Correct. But insults New Jersey historians, so we're perfectly okay.
They're fine. It's fucking
I was hooked. Catching the last 10 minutes of that episode, I was like, I really like this. And then it became appointment television for me. And from there, now 20 years ago, that's how everything got started. I think I was 6, maybe 7 years old.
That's a good start. That's a great start. And do you remember any early quitting moments, or is it just you sort of sidled through to Enterprise like everybody else did?
I almost quit in Enterprise. I think by the time sort of Enterprise season 2 was on, I was feeling pretty tired. I was also getting ready to go to university. I had discovered alcohol. And I, for me, I had reached a point in my life where I thought like Star Trek was one of those childhood things that I was in the process of growing out of. And I did carry Enterprise all the way through the end. But then particularly after that, because Enterprise ended the same year that I went to university, I was like, all right, that's it. I'm done with the Star Trek thing.
You can finally have closure.
Yeah.
You're at peace.
And then I did all of university and was not much of a Star Trek person. And then at the end of university, I had some minor surgery, which put me in bed for about 4 weeks in between my final exam and graduation. And I had all these DVDs sitting up on the shelf. So I was like, fuck it, I'm going to watch Star Trek in order using these DVD box sets. So I started Next Generation, ran my way through Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, Enterprise, and basically watched it all in that 4 week period. And then I was like, yeah, I think I'm a Star Trek fan again. And did the graduation. And then I moved out here to America, and I moved out here 2 weeks before Star Trek The Experience in Las Vegas closed. So I was like, I'm going to make my pilgrimage before it closes. So I arrived here in the DC area on the East Coast on August the 8th, 2008. And then August the 9th, 2008, I flew out to Las Vegas and basically lived in the experience for 3 days. So I quit Star Trek for 3 years. But then... I sort of got back into it.
You came back in full, that's almost like Blues Brothers level return.
I bought my first costume because
like the franchise got you at your weakest.
Oh yeah. No, look at this. It's an audio podcast, so people can't see this.
We're seeing a fabulous
For reference, there's an incredibly fabulous picture of Alex sitting on the deck of the bridge of the Enterprise D.
Yeah, at the experience. I was so embarrassed wearing that too. Because it was like, I'd never worn a Star Trek costume before, and I'm in Las Vegas, a city I've never been in, a hotel I've never been in. So I put it on, and then I put a shirt over it to like go through the hotel, walk through the experience.
You've got to commit.
Yeah, well, now I commit. Now I'm all about the committing. But yes, that was a learning experience for me.
Yeah, I mean, also, I think... nerd and fan culture has changed a lot in the last 15 years as well.
Yeah.
Sorry, John, where were you 15 years ago?
Fuck off. Where were you 15 years ago?
Yours is worse.
No, only by 2 years.
Yeah, those 2 years like actually include sentience.
Back to the serious point.
I'll give you another quit moment too. Was around that same time with Star Trek Nemesis.
Oh, okay,
and like, for anybody who knows me, like I am a shill for Star Trek, right? Like, you know, anybody who has ever leveled that complaint against me is 100% correct that I am a true shill. But Nemesis was a movie I sat through the whole movie just desperately wanting to love it so badly and walking out of the movie and just being like, I don't think I really like that. And it was just this devastating moment of like, I did not enjoy that.
They earnestly let you down. That's even sadder.
Yes.
We've learned here is there are only two things at Star Trek properties that have ever defeated Alex Perry, which is Nemesis and Star Trek Mission Seattle.
Yes.
I listened to your weekly Trek, this week's weekly Trek on the way into work. I was like, fuck me.
That was going to be our I Quit Star Trek convention.
We were going to go. I had made plans. I was going to go travel. Now I have to go to Vegas. It's going to be.
I'm going to spend that money now. I can't wait till Las Vegas in August.
I'm going to go on a tool ship instead. There's no Star Trek at sea.
I will tell you, Vegas is a lot of fun. I mean, it's a little different now that it's not the official convention, but it is a lot of fun. I've done it every year since 2011, and it's been a good time.
I always knew Star Trek would bring me to the Sin City. This Gene's sick plan got right.
When you step back and you think about it, like, first of all, putting Star Trek The Experience in Las Vegas is an odd decision. But then the sort of legacy of that, which is they put the convention there because The Experience was there and they had it in the same hotel. So, like, you know, you could, you know, The Experience bar just absolutely printed money. That weekend, when I went to The Experience, it was like 2 weeks after the convention, and I didn't start going to the conventions for another couple of years, and they'd already switched hotels at that point. But yeah, what a weird thing that a Star Trek convention is in Las Vegas.
Is it to do with when they wanted to build that massive life-size USS Enterprise hotel, and they said they were going to do that in Vegas?
That was one of the like original concepts that ended up becoming The Experience.
So it might need to do with that they'd already agreed to do it. And got a tax break off Nevada and then went, fuck it.
Yeah, that sounds like a money laundering scheme.
Yes. Well, the other thing, so the real reason behind all of that is because in the 1990s, Las Vegas was, the city was really trying to invest in becoming a family-friendly destination. They didn't like the Sin City thing. And so like all of the like wacky hotels, what's the one that looks like Camelot and a lot of those kind of like themey hotels that clearly were built with like kids in mind, that's when most of those got thrown up. And The Experience was actually a big get for Las Vegas because it was like, oh great, now we have a family friendly attraction that we can kind of, you know, promote to people that's not just like a strip club, which was sort of what, you know, Vegas was at that point and now is again pretty much.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, we might go, who knows.
You should, it'll be fun.
It would be fun. I mean, we will continue our noble quest to harass John Von Sitters in public.
Well, I don't think the problem is he'll be there because it's not official anymore.
Yeah, I mean, you know what, we could go, I could move on, but you know, I'm going to have this tangent now because it's a conversation we've all been thinking. So who the fuck is running this?
Yeah, right. Great question.
Are we talking about Seattle?
No, but generally, how do you end up in a situation where there is no, where, you know, you have Star Wars with the celebration, with a blowout, sold out festival, 3-day festival.
Sells out within the globe, sells hours out of the tickets going on sale,
And where MCM can basically churn a profit in England by showing up and booking at half XL, that you can't run a convention on Star Trek properly.
I get the argument that like, okay, yeah, it's not going to be as big or as popular as Star Wars Celebration. Okay, fine, right? Like, it's not going to be the kind of convention where you put the tickets on sale on day, you know, on like a Wednesday and they're sold out by Wednesday night, right? That's not going to be the Star Trek convention. It's just not the kind of the audience for it, the demand for it. That doesn't mean there's no audience for it. That doesn't mean there's no demand for it, right? Like, we all want to go. Vegas has managed to figure it out for 10 years in a row. Like, why Reed Pop cannot, like,
people are traveling from their countries to, like, traveling abroad to go to these conventions. They're canceling on them within like months.
How
are we supposed to have any trust in them for the future?
Exactly. Any argument based off of the demand doesn't exist or fans don't want to do it lands totally flat with me. There are plenty of fans who want to do it. You just have to know how to talk to them about it. Can you look right? Like, it, I think the thing with Reed Pop was, like, with Star Wars Celebration, they don't have to put any effort in to sell it out, right? They just put the tickets on sale, everybody buys them, and then, yeah, they announce the guests within like 3 weeks of the convention and nobody cares. We're different than that. We have a higher level of expectations around, we want to know who the guests are. We want to know what some of the experiences are going to be like when we get there. And Reed, I think Reed Pop just really kind of didn't want to do any of that, right? Like, and Creation goes too far the other way. You know, Creation announces a bunch of guests in September the year before, and a good fraction of them, you know, a decent percentage of guests of their 120 guests every year end up cancelling in the last 2 weeks.
120?
Yeah, but that includes, you know, I mean, it's been, they really reached down the roster of like...
Yeah, it's basically down to like Brian from Accounts, who was in 3 episodes.
Yeah, it's like last year also included in that was the stunt woman who played Antonia on the horse in Star Trek Generations, right? Like a from person that you only saw from a distance with the sun behind her, so you didn't even see her face. She was one of the 120 guests.
Get
me
a role,
so.
Man.
I hope somebody went and said hello. I really hope.
But they had most of the main cast of Strange New Worlds, right? They had everybody except Babs. Everybody else, I'm trying to think if there was anybody else missing. I think everybody else was there from the main cast. So yes, they have the Antonia stunt woman, but they also have, you know, they had Anson Mount, Ethan Peck, Celia Rose Gooding, etc., etc. So Rekha Romijn was there.
Wait, who is in the Gorn suit? This is very serious. We need to go.
Bobby Clark. Always one
alive?
Of like three stunt. Yes. He's normally there every year. I don't think he was there this past year, but he, out of the 11 that I have been to, I would say he has been present at 9 of them. I think he lives in Las Vegas.
I need to meet him and call him a king to his face.
Bobby Clark. And he like he has the Gorn head, and he like that somebody made, it's not the original, it's a replica, but he carries it around with him the whole convention.
Someone has the legs, because the torso and the head are in the museum in LA. Where are the legs? I really need to know.
This is like, Alex, you must know, I think it might be Trek, the missing wigs from season 2.
Yes.
Which is some, you know, my long-standing theory is that you're in a bar in South LA in 1968 and a bloke with a bad toupee tries to sell you 2 wigs.
And he says his name absolutely.
Bill, and he's on a big science fiction show you never heard of. Did that bloke build a show up the next week with 2 green legs and try to sell them to you again?
Yes, one of the most consistent stories of Star Trek is A, making new episodes, and B, selling shit out the back door. Like, so much stuff just exited out the back door.
I would unquestionably buy those legs, and I'm so sorry that I've ever said that sentence, but I wouldn't.
If you are a listener and you know the whereabouts of the Gorn legs, please email us at iquitstartrek@gmail.com. But in the meantime, I'm going to take this moment to park the leg talk. And move on to Doc Talk and discuss.
Oh, that was a segue.
That's the smoothest segue I've had in 5 months. 5 months. That's the smoothest. It's all been for this. And you know what? It was worth it.
I knew my life was going to be ruined when I saw the MH dressed as Samuel Pepys and just writing
like
them, just saying the most obnoxious little monologue I've ever heard in my life.
Well, and the fact that it was over, the introduction was over 10 minutes long.
Like, I mean, I am sitting here with doing the Edge of Midnight stuff, and I read the introduction. I was like, this takes 4 minutes. This feels too long. Like, 9 minutes. It's like, you see, we go through this and we go through the like Doc's thing, and it's like, oh god, it's an unedited fanfic on Archive of Our Own.
Yeah.
That's what he's done.
It really is. It really is. It is right, and like and this is where the dumb thing comes into it too, right? Like the first 20 minutes is him not capable of accepting that putting a moustache on Tom Paris is not going to make people think of Tom Paris, right? Like, until Tom Paris turns the tables on him and presents him a version of the Doctor wearing a, you know, with like slightly more hair. And he's like, oh, I finally get it, right? Like, how do you base 25 minutes of a whole fucking episode on just that idea that like he's too stupid to get that concept? It just, it blows my mind.
Would this episode have been more tolerable if they had actually made him talented?
Yeah, right. Like there is a great episode here, right? Like, you know, the idea of exploring further his personhood or not through creating a work of art and then having that be challenged. And we can get to like how, you know, fucking 20th century the publishing agent is rather than the 24th century.
Yeah, the
but
publishing
like,
agent's deep
yeah,
funny.
Where's the Bern convention in the Star Trek universe? That's what I want to know.
Like, there's a great episode there, but this is not it, right? Like, this is the worst possible presentation of all of these ideas that just have a bunch of tonal heel turns in them, right? The last 10 minutes is a courtroom drama. The first 20 minutes is a character exploration, such as it is.
And why the fuck is Barkley back? Why the fuck is Barkley? I was so upset. I was distraught. Like,
wait, Olivia, is this the first Barkley Returns episode you've seen from Voyager?
It is.
Yes. It why is. The hell did
oh
this even
my
happen?
Goodness.
Olivia, you do realize this is the best Barkley appearance of Voyager. It's like five or six.
And
this is the best
there
Barkley
are a lot of them.
He didn't even do anything. He just had like his little testimony at the end and ruined
my
Barkley
day. Okay, so the reason, Olivia, do you care about Voyager spoilers? I know you don't.
No, I don't care anymore. They've crushed my soul.
So Barkley is the reason Starfleet can talk to Voyager because he breaks basically.
Oh, fuck.
He does that.
He figures out how to talk to them. Yes.
I would honestly rather it be Neelix at this point because, like, why the hell?
He has a cat named Neelix.
What?
Oh, yeah, true story. Yes, yes.
Sorry, yes. Barkley has a cat named Neelix.
Barkley has a cat named... Oh, we should have done Pathfinder for this episode.
Named
okay.
after Neelix
so,
or just like... What,
named
why?
After Neelix, yes. So, all right. I'm gonna blow your mind right now. The conceit of the episode Pathfinder is that Barkley is working on the Starfleet project to try and contact Voyager, except that he has become obsessed with Voyager to the extent that he has created a holodeck program of all of the Voyager crew in which they're all his best friend. And that's the central conceit of the episode.
Also, Deanna Troi's in it.
I'm done
Deanna
Troi's
in the episode.
Yes, and Deanna
also,
Troi's in the episode.
There's another episode where the Ferengi try and steal Voyager.
Oh, God, that
and
episode
they do
is
so
bad.
Because Barkley gets a girlfriend. Who steals the data for the Ferengi.
I'm actually using The Will to Live. I'm like, what are you...
Oh, there's another episode.
Talking about why?
There's another episode where the doctor thinks he's dying, and the voice in his head telling him he's not dying is Barkley.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That's
yes,
really
Barkley
on.
Actually... Yeah, Barkley actually... Yes, yes.
So, Barkley
so you've seen a Barkley
a god,
episode.
Is what you're telling me.
No, Olivia's probably seen a Barkley episode, but then removed it from her mind.
Yeah, that seems very fair. I don't understand why he has been brought back in this important capacity.
Critical, pivotal character to the last two seasons of Star Trek Voyager.
Truly
for some
solidified.
Fucking reason. So, yeah, they have this 11 minutes of contact and. Let's see. It's kind of nice. That's a more interesting plot, really. It's the whole 11 minutes of contact, everybody talking to someone.
Yeah.
You know, Harry and his overbearing parents, Balana talking to her dad,
yep.
Seven talking to her only living relative. These are all great plots we don't see because instead we're dealing with a fucking publisher. I do like the combination of a Broughton Forrester, which is clearly... You know, a Bolium bloke and some
publisher of the Dixon Hill series, Jack.
But Dixon Hill's from the literally explicitly from the 40s, right?
Yes,
like, explicitly yes. In TNG, the text of the Dixon Hill books are written in the 40s. So,
yes,
is Forrester like did this Andoria guy buy a defunct 21st century publisher?
I guess one of the I guess one of the questions becomes is Picard such a celebrity in the 24th century that the fact that he loved Dixon Hill so much mean that Broughton Forrester bought the rights to Dixon Hill and are now doing the like Nick Meyer Sherlock Holmes novel style thing and publishing
I wore a type of jacket and now it's just a piece of fashion.
Yeah.
So it's not unprecedented.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think we've fixed that problem.
Yeah. But more importantly, Olivia, how does IP law work here?
When I realized this episode had IP in it, I just died inside. What are we referring to? Let's start at the beginning. There's a case that was popular a few years ago, which I hated during my I hated. So it was about whether a monkey could have copyright in his photo because he took the photo.
Oh yes, the selfie.
Yeah, it's called like Naruto versus Slater. It's like the most common question and young academic could write an essay about, like a boring essay, basically. So I hate the concept of like, can AI be an artist? Can an animal be the copyright owner? In that case, the guy who took the photo spent so much defending himself against Peter, who pursued him on behalf of the animal. He was broke. He couldn't afford to feed his daughter. He couldn't afford to go to the hearings. I'm like, can you just give the humans what they need first? I'm so sorry, EMH. I'm so sorry, the monkey who took the photo. But he literally created the scenario himself. Like, the monkey didn't spontaneously pick up the camera. He literally taught the monkey to, like, take the pig and all this.
So why? Okay.
I really don't have...
I'm still not clear on this. If the monkey... The guy taught the monkey to take the photo, why was somebody suing on behalf of the monkey? Because the monkey was...
Because it's fucking Peter. That's so annoying.
Yeah, right. For the principle of it, I think is the answer.
His life ruined by Peter because they wanted to do a bit.
I now agree with Shakespeare. Kill all the lawyers.
It's not the lawyers' fault. They drove this poor man. I don't even know if this man is okay. I think he's broke.
Wait, so Olivia, you're now swap out crusty old judge from this episode and you're sitting in the seat. How are you ruling?
First of all, why is this judge trying to decide on personhood? It doesn't matter. If the statute is unclear as to whether it, or if it just says author, then it can apply to him without having this weird philosophical debate, which actually happened in the monkey selfie case, because they just said the copyright statute in the US doesn't include animals. Other elements of US law could extend to animals, I think, but just for the Copyright Act, it doesn't apply. So it's really kind of black letter.
You know what's kind of... It's fairly clear to me that everybody in that courtroom is aware of the whole LuVar data case.
And yes.
It's fairly clear to me at some point Owen Paris received a call from the president and the president went, we are not fucking doing that again. So you better make sure there was a ruling that doesn't actually fall down either way. Because the judiciary, basically, presumably the judiciary spent like 10 years after the LuVar case trying to iron out what exactly she'd ruled on.
Yeah.
It's like, we just finished doing that. We're not doing it again.
How did they leave that case? What was
the Measure of Man one?
Yeah, what was the
end result? Basically, they ruled that data was
a person.
A person that came to make decisions.
Yeah.
And then obviously the point being, does that mean that all androids have rights, which of course leads us right into Picard season one, and yet another stillborn plot point. Please see everything we've said about Picard previously. But basically, that case was presumably opened a massive legal hot potato, and nobody wants to open another one.
They complicated it for themselves. Just say that you're going to give the android rights. Why does he have to be a person? Just extend who can, you know, have the benefits of law. I don't know.
Right. Yeah, well, in the same way that, Jack, you're talking about it from the in-universe perspective of everyone was aware of the Measure of Man case, I think Brandon Braga, who wrote this episode, was thinking very much about the Measure of Man when he wrote this episode and was trying to create his own version of it. I just think that he was very tired and in the middle of creating Enterprise at this time, and it's just not a very good episode because it just has it's too many ideas mishmashed together in a way that's not interesting, right? Like the Measure of a Man, like a full half of that episode is just the courtroom or connected to the courtroom. This one, the courtroom such as it is just like shoehorned in the last 10 minutes, and the rest of it is about how mean the doctor is to all of these people who supposedly is friends.
And that's why I wasn't rooting for him. I'm so sorry that this one guy made me anti-AI.
This would be an interesting episode if the Doctor's plot story had been less hackneyed.
It's just, I think, one of the elements. He can be a dick and he can be talented, and that's fine. Or he can not be a dick and not be talented, and then it's fine. Right. But all of it?
Yeah. Well, because to me, the most interesting nugget in the episode is when he is talking to, I think it's to Neelix, about his motivation for writing the Hollow novel. Because in a previous episode, it has been established that he is the only EMH Mark One still doing Doctor stuff, that all the rest of them, they were so annoying and so had such bad personalities that when the EMH Mark II came along, Starfleet decommissioned them all, reprogrammed them, and they're like mining dilithium or scrubbing plasma barges or whatever. It's inconsistent what they say that they're all off doing. And there's that moment in the episode where the Doctor says, I am doing this not really for me, I'm doing this for them because I think they are oppressed, right? Because they, you know, they're doing these jobs now that they were not originally programmed for. They're being treated as a second-class citizens, et cetera, et cetera. And like, there is an interesting version of this episode where he is trying to make social commentary on holographic rights and whether he and his fellow holograms should have more personhood than they do. Just like, the Voyager spoof parody thing was like totally not the way to do it, because you're just fixated on, it's not particularly funny, it's really crass, it's bad fan fiction, and it's intentionally bad fan fiction too. And for me, bad writing's just bad writing. It doesn't matter if it's intentionally bad writing, it's still bad. And like, so being presented a bad Hollow novel still means that I'm having a bad time watching it.
Yeah, if you're going to do bad writing, the trick is just to not do a lot of it.
Right, yeah.
Just
a little throwaway line
here
and
there. Can't write.
Exactly.
Which I think we already know from the Doctor.
Right, and you just needed one of those scenes to do that, right? The fact they then had like 10 scenes showing you the Doctor's version of each of the characters, right? Like, how do we could have just done the one scene at the start where Paris and Chakotay, or Marseille and whatever Chakotay's like vortex name was mean to him, and that could have maybe done the Moblimus thing, and that would have established it, right? You didn't then need to know that Harry Kim was a hypochondriac, Janeway was a murderer, right? Like, they leaned too hard into that bit, yeah. And it wasn't funny and it wasn't good.
Even though the writing is bad, he would still, just from a copyright perspective, he would still have rights because it's an original work. I just think that there were other ways that they could have taken him down almost immediately. I don't know why they shot down the defamation angle. Of course you can. It's your face. It's literally your face. Go for it. You don't have to. It's not like you're proving that they're right about you. It's you're proving that they're wrong about you. It's fine.
Yeah, I think the whole point was they didn't go for the defamation because Janeway was basically like, we could get it off that way, but what we wouldn't do is prove the Doctor had any rights to publish the material.
Okay, I already didn't care about the Doctor, so I'm sorry. I would have an injunction within 5 minutes of the episode.
Yeah, to be fair, Olivia, super injunction defamation rules in England are a lot stricter than they are in the States, so.
I don't know what's going on over there. Praying for you, though.
England
is a country
people.
Where super injunction rules are so heavy that we just can't talk about the royal family properly.
We have to secret society one. We can just do a normal interim injunction. It's okay. They're not all
dramatic.
Like
the one David Beckham has.
Let's get sued by David Beckham. That'll be fun.
I think because you remember that there's a Voyager, Alex will remember this episode, Olivia won't because she's better than us. The Voyager episode where the Doctor discovers he's had a whole section of his memory wiped.
Yes.
I would have just done this as a follow-up to that.
Yes.
And have him, You know how I'd have done it? If you're going to have a discussion about rights, it would be the Doctor tell his story to a journalist on Earth, and then Starfleet, or write it out as a fiction, and then Starfleet quashes the story because they're like, we don't want to talk about it.
That's another point too, right? Like, the way in which, like, the Federation is like really not shown to be all that much better than 1990 or 2000, I guess, at this point, United States of America, right? Like, the first of all, the publishing agent just being like, nah, I'm going to publish it. What are you going to do? Right? Like, technically, there's not supposed to be any profit in it. So, like, why he's so desperate to get this out and, like, you know, has that business incentive. But two, one of the Tuvok's suggestion for how to quash the distribution of the story, and this ties into what you were just saying, Jack, is that is where he's like, well, we could just say that there's classified material in it, and therefore Starfleet needs also to just shut down the distribution of it.
Oh, and I was going to say, does EMH have an employment contract? But never mind. That's part of the problem, I guess.
Yeah. But it's just like, okay, you know, 1990s White House, right? Like, it is not a terribly sophisticated presentation of 24th century political life that we would expect, given everything that we've been told about how that society technically functions.
You know what's funny to this about me is that this episode confirms my increasing theory that the character stereotype for Bolians is just assholes.
Yeah, it's sure.
Like, Ferengi yes. are greedy, Cardassians are, you know, this, and it's like, right, it's like, how do I run a Bolian? Oh,
yeah,
they're just a dick.
Nondescript assholes with a blue face.
They're not, like, evil. They're just basically, like, somebody who's just, they're like a middle manager, basically.
Yeah.
Which is horrible, really. In fact, that makes it worse than a Cardassian, because they're just annoying bastards.
He said Kardashians, yes.
We're keeping that in.
They're always in my heart.
But it's like, there's this whole really interesting thing about the communication, and we have Harry and his mum and him not yep. really...
He should have let his mum send the letter. Because this guy needs all the help he can get. Okay?
Yeah, right, yes.
It's a season yes. 7, he's not promoted.
Yeah, something is wrong there.
Well, the obvious thing is Garrett Wang stop smoking pot on set, and then you'll get a promotion.
Allegedly.
Never give in, never surrender. That's what I say.
For the record, he denies it.
He did that. For the record, listen, Garrett, if you did it, we think you're cool. You know what? Anything that fucks up Rick Berman is cool with us. So,
yeah. And if you didn't do it, guest on the podcast to clear your name.
Yeah, you know where to find us. But and then there's the whole thing with B'Elanna and her dad, which I think should have just been a larger plot. Because we talked before this podcast about how B'Elanna's dad McFucking sucks, right?
Yes.
And
Go ahead, sorry.
He comes back here and there's this whole thing about him wanting to reopen their relationship. And, you know, he does it in a very succinct way. It's like, I can't apologize and I can't expect to be forgiven, etc. But like, can we try and start again? That was a good plot. And it's just kind of a sidebar.
Yeah, it's a nice follow-up to
Is it Bloodlines?
Lineage. From earlier in the season, which is about B'Elanna wanting to alter her baby's DNA to remove all the Klingon sort of physical traits, and there's flashbacks, and that's where you meet the father character for the first time. So it's a nice follow-up to that. But yeah, it's like I would have liked to have seen more of that. I would have liked to have seen, like, rather than spend time with the parody Voyager characters, I want to spend time with the actual Voyager characters talking to their family members. Certainly because, right, one of the criticisms of Voyager, again, Olivia, I apologize, this is a spoiler, is that they get home and the episode ends immediately. So you don't see that.
Oh my God. Are you fucking kidding me?
I didn't realize you didn't know that.
I am actually done. What do you mean? It just ends.
There's a shot of Voyager going towards
like
Earth,
the Sopranos,
flying towards Earth. Black. Boom,
it's literally like a Sopranos. They might as well play Don't Stop Believing.
I'm actually done with Voyager.
So
this has crushed me in a different way. But
so like what you're getting in this episode is the emotional cathartic moment of our characters reconnecting with their families, because it sure shit does not come later in the season.
I really need to know this. Do I ever see Tuvok's family?
No.
Okay, I'm done.
So yeah, I mean, we can. Yeah, this will shift into the Endgame podcast if we go too far down the
Endgame. Definitely doing an Endgame podcast just for Olivia.
We can do like my live final watch of it and then the episode. Yeah,
it will happen. We'll make it Patreon content. That, The Visitor, the live podcast I've yet to put up. Sorry, Olivia. But it's just... I mean, there's some nice bits. Like Neelix writing a cookbook. You could actually buy that cookbook. I have a PDF of it. It's fine. Alexander Siddique has some weird food tastes.
Yes, the Neelix cookbook. The new cookbook, the one by Chelsea Rose Cassell, is actually way better than the Neelix cookbook.
Well, I feel like the point of a Neelix cookbook didn't make me frown at the recipes, it's doing it wrong.
What is an example of a Neelix recipe? Because I feel upset already.
Alexander Siddig's dish of choice on set when he's in a rush was to take a tin of sausage beans and pour it on top of pasta.
Oh, there were so many ways to end that sentence that I would have been okay with. And yeah.
What it is, it's very much like, I look at this and I look at the way he describes it. I'm like, yeah, Alexander Siddig is the epitome of modern Englishness, because he's not English.
Yeah.
In any way whatsoever, but he can shell out the most horrible food you've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm the kind of guy who still, to this day, and, you know, my American friends and family are horrified about this, enjoys putting baked beans on a pizza, but pasta.
Alex, have you ever met Terry? Oh, this is important. Like... We need separation at birth. We need to check.
I feel like I need to cancel you for this. If you're
being
this is beyond the pale.
This has been a fun one-time-only appearance on I Quit Star Trek.
Because there's a Heinz baked bean pizza, and
yes, there is. There was in the 90s. There was like in the 90s, and I enjoyed it then. And one of my biggest regrets about not living there at this moment, well, there are many reasons why I don't regret not living there at this moment, but one of the reasons I do regret not living there at this moment is that it has come back again. My beloved Heinz Baked Bean Pizza.
I haven't seen it, and I'm glad I haven't. So.
I think it's Iceland.
Yeah, I have. Have you not seen it, Olivia? It's in Iceland.
I haven't seen
it. It's like they let Terry make food for people.
I've seen the images, and that's enough for me.
But
don't knock it till you tried it.
I mean, the revisions bit's interesting because you're right, back to the...
Yes, author, not baked bean pizza, author.
But when...
I can't believe I'm on a podcast with... my American friends are gonna destroy me for this. I'm on a podcast with three British people and they think it's just as disgusting as they do.
It's okay.
Someone has to have a moral backbone.
This has changed a lot in 20 years. It's modern. Tony Blair saved us.
You can quote us on that.
You can quote me on that. I mean, anyway. So I think this whole sequence where Neelix makes them like talk about like what the actual point of the book was, and then he goes and talks like we're doing revisions.
Yep.
I think it'd be more interesting to watch the Doctor do all these revisions, and they build this story which reflects both his experience, but then also the crew's experience of realizing the Doctor is more than a program.
Oh, yeah, that would have been great.
And then after that, you then have the publisher go, no, I don't want this version. It's not sensational.
Right. Yeah, I like that. You should have written this episode, Jack.
Yeah, that's half of this show is just basically, I know what I'm doing, because I've had 20 years. Shockingly, hindsight is 2020. But I just think that the whole, they bring up this whole revision engine, they don't go anywhere with it. And I just think it would have been, because in season 7, it would have been a great reflection on the show's progress to have, you know, they start with this whole thing where everyone's terrible as the Doctor, but then, you know, people input previous experiences where it's like, you know, Janeway realizing this and, you know, the command hologram and, you know, all the great Doctor episodes basically reflect on those.
Yeah. I also don't like, one of the things I don't like about this episode is he is so mean-spirited towards them in that first 20 minutes where he presents them as being awful people. And it's just like, I don't care what you think. I'm an author. I get to say what I want to say.
He's a genius.
Yeah. And then the moment that like they switch to the courtroom part of the episode, it's like all of that is forgiven. And of course, like, you know, enlightened 24th century you know, sort of humanity. Yes, we forgive readily and we accept people's flaws. But like, I would have been fucking pissed off if that were me. And I don't think I would have leaned so hard into the like, see, this whenever, guy is the fucking best in,
whenever
in,
anybody in the says courtroom about, scene. Whenever anyone says about liberated 24th century humans, I remember watching Bill Mumy beat Jem'Hadar to death with a rock. I'm just like,
I don't officially condone violence, but early on in the episode, I was like, why doesn't someone just fight him? Yeah, the way he was coming towards Tom Paris, the attitude, he was up in his face like this.
You're like,
And being genuinely mean about Tom's like holodeck stuff, right? Which and then also, is pretty lowbrow, but like, so was your stuff, dude, right? Like, the USS Vortex is not exactly high literature.
But like also the whole Tom adultery thing. Imagine if the plot had been Tom suing the doctor.
Yeah, right.
Or something like that. But that's, yeah, that's just like really bad.
The recriminations of that were also just, it was unnecessary detail to have him then assault someone in the other alternate version.
Yeah. It makes Spaceballs look like high art.
It's right, like, It's not just mean-spirited parody. It's like actively, like Marseille commit. Basically, it is said that he commits assault, and it's like, oh, and then Janeway murders somebody, and it's like you didn't just present them in a negative light. You actually made them criminals.
Okay, this was another thing. Was this supposed to be some long-running Tuvix joke? What was, like, they kept suggesting she was a murderer, and it felt like some, like, sort of in, like, ha-ha.
Is it perhaps the writer thinking about that episode, what's the name of the one with the doctor's simulated program waking up, like, 900 years
old? Living Witness.
Yeah, is it meant to be a lean on Living Witness?
Yeah, it could be, yeah.
Where, like...
When diplomacy fails, there's only one solution. Violence. Force must be applied without apology.
Yeah, that's...
He wakes up alone.
Olivia, I need
the Red Dwarf Voyager.
No, this watch Living Witness after,
which is genuinely a great episode.
Yeah, okay. Living Witness is great, and with probably several people's gay awakenings. Good for them. It's better than this, and it feels like that was a reference to it.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the other thing too, right? It's like, okay, you want to do an evil parody of the crew. You already did that 3 years ago. You did a good version of it. You did an evil parody. So the conceit of Living Witness is the Doctor's backup program is reactivated 900 years in the future on this planet where Voyager had had an encounter with those people. And it had been like history had twisted the story of what Voyager did. And they had like built it into their political narrative of Voyager was the cause of all of their problems. And like, you see the simulation of what they say happened and the Voyager crew are all evil and they commit a genocide on the planet. And then the Doctor's like, none of this is true and true to what happened. I was there. Let me show you what happened. And, you know, then shows them the real events and it causes a civil war on the planet and blah, blah, blah. Like, you had the parody Voyager crew there and it was done so fucking well. I love that episode. This one is just childish.
You know, there's this thing where we're like Star Trek series shows to last for 7 seasons, and I'm increasingly of the opinion that 7 seasons is a mistake. Just 6, guys. Or
you
5.
Want to Enterprise them.
Yeah, just not to Enterprise them, but like the only of the 3 7-season runs, only one got it right in the last season. And they got that right with incredibly intricate planning, and they still kind of fucked it. You know, where is Jake Sisko for all of season 7 of DS9? Where's Garak? You know, nevertheless, this is upsetting. We've sort of lost all control.
I just tweeted from the podcast account that every day Voyager chips away at a piece of my soul. Because I've had to do a lot, like in this, 40 minutes. I've had a lot of revelations and...
Let's do some trivia.
Wait, did we get to the... What is the crux of this episode?
Okay, you know, we'll do that first. Yeah. The crux of this episode is that they don't convince the lawyers, the judge, that the doctor has legal rights because they have legal rights. They convince him by just saying he's a nice dude who changes and alters and has been
bullshit. What statute? What? How does that help? The statute is either written or not. What is the law in the Starfleet universe? I hate it.
It appears that basically
it's only
character witnesses
vibes.
Are a lot, but it's also weird because in Measure for Man, it's done through the law. Like, because basically they say that legally, the Federation has a legal definition of sentience, which is the three proof, you know, the scientific proof is the three proofs of sentience. And the data meets all three. They don't do anything like that. Because the problem is with law is that there's one way to do it or there isn't. So they don't want to just repeat what happens in a measure.
You either fit within the definition of the law or you expand the law because you see that there's a reason to change it. And
they don't do either.
They don't do
either. In fact, they explicitly don't do either because the arbiter is basically like, I don't want to make law today, so I won't.
Right.
I feel like the Federation should reintroduce common law.
Please, I just... common law, some basic general conventions would be great. I'm praying for them. But we have to, we can't also skip the strange ending, which I actually don't really understand what was happening in the end.
Oh fuck yes, the holographic
yes.
Slaves working mining tools with 18th century equipment. They don't have like pumps or mechanical drills. They're using pickaxe. What are they mining?
What is the
point of that scene?
Is that just happening in? Is that how they're all living? The rest of the EMHs? Can't even say that name.
I just don't know what
they had to make it
rock.
They had to hearken to. I don't know.
Could you like? You know what would have been funnier if the EMHs had been a bunch of waiting staff.
Waiting like, stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, if they'd be like a bunch of waiters servants? In the back of a restaurant somewhere, running around grabbing food.
Put them in the DMV.
they're all the staff at the post office. That would work too. The thing is, the ending isn't. So, Banner Braga writes everything up to the courtroom scene, and then he's kind of like peters out. It's like, I don't know what to do. And then Kenneth Biller wrote the courtroom drama at the end.
Oh, right, okay.
And, best bit of the episode.
Yeah, that was... I was confused why that wasn't most of the episode.
Yeah.
Because I had heard of this episode before, and I assumed it would be the majority of the plots.
No. No.
My mistake.
This was the 600th episode of Star Trek.
God, is it really the 600th? What an ignoble milestone.
And then the 700th is In a Mirror Darkly.
Okay, that's actually a good episode.
Yeah. This is just not a good 600th episode.
Should have ended it after TOS.
Like the world would be
true purist,
TOS
Olivia.
TOS is the peak of the Star Trek, and I will...
I don't know. I just listened to your episode with Mike McMahon over the weekend on Gamesters, and you guys had some salty things to say about TOS too.
We did, but also Mike seemed in denial that I was like a TOS stan. I had to explain. He was like, "You're being too nice." I was like, "No, Mike, you don't understand."
I do like that. I finally agree with Al Murray about the quality of Star Trek.
Oh, what was that?
Are you aware of the Al Murray beef, Alex?
Yes.
I've had this conversation. He's still a year on, Olivia. He still refuses to admit that CS9 could be good. So
I'm so personally offended. You know what? Let's put it on the record. I have a personal beef with Al Murray.
Apologies, Al, but you've been put on notice.
You've been on notice. You know, you might be an award-winning comedian with a new book out, which I recommend to everyone.
Yeah, but Olivia's not happy. So what have you really achieved?
But so what else? Trivia-wise. So there's a whole bunch of various references to other Doctor stuff. They don't talk about the Data episode at all, which is kind of scummy of them because they obviously don't want to pay the writer. The epilogue takes place 4 months after the main events of the episode. The previous episode, the epilogue with the transporters, with the holograms, takes place 4 months after the episode. Which technically means it takes place 1 month after Voyager ends.
What does that mean?
Yeah, okay, yeah. Our farthest look into the future.
Yeah,
so that's the most you get in terms of that's the ending of Voyager. That's the most you get in terms of what happens to Voyager after they get home again.
That is my closure.
And 20 seconds.
That's your closure. You just got your closure right there, Olivia. Yeah.
And 20 seconds of Star Trek Nemesis as well.
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
Every day. Star Trek destroys me.
It's really funny that the best review they have this episode of Memory Alpha is from somebody called Jammer's Reviews.
Oh, Jammer! Oh, I used to love Jammer.
Yeah.
Did he give it a good review?
He gave it 4 stars.
Good lord.
It plays like a successful blending of Worst Case Scenario, Living Witness, Tinker Tenor, Dr. Spy, Pathfinder, Flesh and Blood, and of course, and perhaps most notably, TNG's famous Measure of a Man.
Oh, you were in a really good mood, Jammer.
Who paid you?
Normally, I agree with a lot of his Star Trek review opinions, but that one is way out there. I would watch all of those episodes in a heartbeat before I would ever think about watching Author again.
It's just not very. Just what? Oh, and there's one nice bit of final trivia, which is that the episode shares plot similarities with the I Love Lucy episode. Lucy writes a novel in which Lucy writes a novel based on her life that includes unflattering portrayals of people in her life, in her case, her husband and neighbours, using silly described character names. Which is nice, you know.
Fine. I'll allow it.
Yeah, anything. We all love a good Lucille Ball reference.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Is this all we have now to...
What, Lucille Ball references to save to recover as a saving grace? Yes.
Best thing about the episode.
And it might be a Lucille Ball reference.
No official apologies from Paramount, nothing.
So, we have to ask the important question. Will also make us quit Star Trek?
I think that this record has made me quit Star Trek. I've been broken down and it's honestly been a while since the breakdown has been this powerful. Voyager is basically ends. It's banter. It's a banter ending. I learn nothing after this ordeal that you've all been forcing me to go through as Trekkies, and I get nothing from it.
I mean, you get Tuvok.
I don't even get to see his family, John. I wanted to see his lovely little kids with their terrible haircuts, probably.
I'm very sorry that I have destroyed what little faith you had left in this franchise, Olivia.
It's okay,
she'll get bored next week, it's fine. It's like...
It had to happen.
Why, what episode are you doing next week?
I haven't checked yet.
We don't plan that far ahead.
Yeah, I guess. Okay, yes. Given we decided this yesterday.
We decided this episode 20 hours ago. At 1 a.m.
It was technically still today for you guys.
Yeah. Instead of keeping it yesterday for me. UK time. So this is... Here's the thing, though. This episode is just bad. But it didn't really hurt me. It was just kind of like, oh, come on. I don't know whether that's just because all the Voyager I've watched has been bad, so this isn't actually like a step down.
I've
learned to expect this from Voyager writers, so it's not a disappointment.
I didn't need to see Neelix portray the EMH character and being told of his sexual escapades. Because I still had to see Neelix as the face of that. So yes, it did break me.
You didn't have to remind me about that. You could have just... You could have just kept it to yourself. So are we...
Nothing will ever make me quit Star Trek. Nothing.
You're too strong, Alex.
Is that an official statement?
Yes.
Wow. Even the cancelling of Mission Seattle?
All right, we came pretty close there.
Close. They haven't broken you yet. That's good.
No, what can I say? I'm fully in the tank. I'm a total shill.
What's sort of like two-thirds of the way through Cheddar Command Part 2 here with Alex, you know?
Yeah.
He's sort of like sitting in a rags in the corner while the Cardassian girl talks to his child.
That's it, exactly. I just knocked down a live Taspar egg, and I'm ready for more.
I'm not going to overthink that. So
good for
you. We're going to put that in the booth here as a no on the spreadsheet, and we're going to move on to the next section, Olivia. What is the next section?
Are we going to trip nip this bitch?
Yes.
And that's how I'm going to introduce it from now on. Trip Nips, as we all should know, is based on the Enterprise episode Unexpected, in which Trip Tucker finds himself pregnant and gaining nipples. So we measure the curseness of an episode as such. 10 trip nips, it's a disaster. Our life is ruined. 1 trip nip, deal with it. Use some foundation, you'll be fine. So how trip nippable is Awful Awful to you?
On Paris and a moustache, it's an 8 out of 10.
I thought he was hollow with the moustache.
He wasn't. And then they gave Chakotay a like dodgy Bajoran awful.
Yeah. Fucking...
He just looked like he went to jail. I'm not gonna be
And Lieutenant Tulok.
Lieutenant Tulok with a
with his goatee. Yeah.
And Harry Kim's slick back hair.
Yep. 6.5.
Six. It's like a little nipple poking through the top.
There was something about this episode that had the 4 in energy to me. And as we all, I think if you know me, you know that the 4 is like traumatized me. And there was something fever dream nightmarish about having to delve into the MH's book. So I have to give it, I'll go 6.5. I'm going to keep it.
6.5 as well.
Keep with the consensus.
8, 8, and 6.5. Let's see. Microsoft time? Excel says the score is 7. I could have guessed that. I can count. 7 trip nips out of 10. That is.
It's decent. I almost want to give it more.
Same rating as Favorite Son, Ex Post Facto.
Okay. Yeah.
It's just higher than The Cage.
The Cage. I don't know if we gave it that high.
We gave The Cage 6. I've got it here. Oops. We did give A Night in Sick Bay 10 out of 10. So
no, that's good. That's I stand by that.
So we must come to the final Olivia based section.
The final segment that is supposed to bring our hearts back.
There's
something to rejoice about.
Yes.
Do you have any high art to add to the scale that I am sole, shall we say, dictator of?
I was going to go with Arbiter. Archon.
We're
going to go with Archon, the High Archon.
The High Art curator, Dean. So there are episodes that I like that are apparently unconventional.
Yep.
Arena, Spock's Brain, Masks. Masks is honestly... Every day, my love.
Masaka is waking.
A beautiful line, a beautiful sentiment.
Absolutely. I try to live my life by the tale of Masaka and Korgano.
Yeah, like chasing the sun and the moon.
Exactly,
like
yeah. Mm-hmm.
I just think John's not enlightened enough to get it, but it's okay.
No. One of Brent Spiner's truly finest performances in all of Star Trek.
That's actually true. And John will have to fight me. Anyway, is there anything that you would like to submit to this list, this dignified list?
Ooh.
I know that people have won a place on this list by just showing me an image of the episode.
Yeah.
There's really...
What episode was that?
It's true.
No, it was Spock and Mock, yeah.
No, it was one of the guy who was literally barely in the episode, but he was sitting in the captain's chair in a beautiful way. I can't remember.
Oh, yes. I want to submit the episode Repression, which is a terrible episode of season 7 of Voyager, but it is the one where the gif comes from of Harry Kim smiling as he is phased. You guys see that one?
Oh my god, that episode is terrible.
Obviously, I haven't seen the episode, but that
but gif you've seen
is
the
art in itself.
Hold on, wait, let's see if I can find it for you.
That's the Tuvok is the Manchurian candidate episode, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Oh,
yes.
It's so bad, Olivia. It's so fucking
yeah,
bad.
Hold on, hold on. I've got the picture of it on Reddit. Here you go. I'm dropping the link into the chat.
Let's see. I'm looking up the images. Ooh. Is that Chakotay in the mind meld? I don't know what's going on in this mind meld picture I'm seeing. Right, and reject. What's this? Oh yeah. I know this. Meme.
That is how it feels to be on Star Trek Twitter all of the time.
That's how it feels to watch Star Trek Voyager. That's every time someone... Oh, I need to do my official announcement. Anytime someone brings in a Voyager episode to the podcast, I'm going to start charging an emotional distress tax. And actually, that does start with you, Alex. So
okay, how much do I owe you?
I don't know, but there has to be some sort of forfeit.
Well, listen, Genevieve charges me $20 per every time I have her on the podcast. She's the only woman, so I think we can start there.
Right, I still owe her $80. Star Trek Las Vegas.
I still owe Genevieve $80. Every time it's just, I'll pay her back eventually. When the dollar is no longer worth anything, in like you know whenever that is, I'll pay her back.
Oh my gosh, sorry, I've just seen a picture of Tuvok in a turtleneck, and he looks hot. So yeah, it definitely secured. The episode
that's on the high art list. Okay, okay. Repression. That's fine. I can take that. Repression's goofy. We should do it on this podcast at some point. If you want to do repression on the podcast, please let us know somehow. While Olivia contemplates hot Tuvok, do you have anything to plug to the listeners, Alex?
Just that if you are interested in a mostly weekly Star Trek news podcast, you can find me over at Weekly Trek, and I do a decent amount of writing for Trek Core, and you can find my stuff over there. And you can also find me on Twitter myself at Alexander C. Perry for as long as Twitter exists.
I'm giving it till after Christmas. You know, much people say Twitter will be over by Christmas, but you know what? They said that about World War One, and look how that. You know, we got years and a million and.
Oh, it's not going anywhere. It's not going anywhere.
Musk. Twitter.
It's not. I should also say now to everyone who enjoyed my Strange New Worlds reviews this year, you should thank Alex for that. He's the reason I got the opportunity to do that.
Whoop, whoop. Best. One of the only good decisions I've made this year.
Oh, thank you. I don't know what to feel about that, actually. I feel quite bad now. Thank you for that, Alex. Please do check out Weekly Trek. I've been on there myself. It's good fun, very useful for keeping up with our terrifying fandom.
If you want to hear more of me bitching and moaning about the cancellation of Mission Seattle, that episode did go up this morning.
That was great fun. and if you like, Trekcore's great. Trekcore has the largest archive of screen high definition screenshots of Star Trek episodes I've ever seen.
Who wants to know what I've used that for very recently?
What have you used it for very recently, Olivia?
The pictures of Trip in the desert. Is it Desert Crossing?
I did those screen caps, all of the Enterprise Blu-ray ones of me. I did all of those.
Saved them all, and I had them before, but I had to recently. I don't know why I had to.
What, Olivia? Why did you have them?
And knowing that's a popular scene for lots of people, I made sure to capture as many different angles and moments from it as I could.
Beautiful selection.
I mainly use the screenshots for like doing my Star Trek Starship game. And I also used the sound effect archive, which is incredibly useful to build a soundboard for that. So yeah, Trekcore's great. Please check them out. Read the stuff I've written on there because that's cool. But otherwise, you can find us at Quit Star Trek Pod on Twitter and probably Mastodon by the time we find this out. We'll be there. I might make a Tumblr. That'll be funny. We can talk about Gonchoros.
Actually, I never had a Tumblr era when I was younger, so it's.
I never had a Tumblr era either. I just went straight from 8 years old to 52. We've been over this.
Let's have that. Let's have a. Never mind.
Let's do that. Anyway, we will Google I Quit Star Trek or whatever social media you're on. We're there. That's us. There's no one else. Email us likewithstartrek@gmail.com if you want to come on the podcast. Same message us on Star Trek. Leave us a review. People don't seem to do that much. Please leave us reviews on iTunes and stuff so people come and listen to us. Holler at us in the street. No, don't actually do that. Please don't.
You can holler at us at Star Trek Las Vegas if that somehow
happens. That happens, touch wood. support us on Patreon at I Quit Star Trek. Don't beat up a pigeon. I don't know.
What?
I saw somebody drop kick a pigeon this morning, and it made me feel very sad.
Blackout? When did
good lord?
A pigeon? Yeah, I was
just walked.
What kind of country is it degenerating into over there?
I walked out of Black Friday station. I watched this pigeon walk right into a man's boot, and the pigeon just went.
Okay,
just
that's
random
like
pigeon violence.
No,
this country's got a lot more foul since Brexit, Alex. People punch pigeons. They vote for the Tory party. It's very bad. But yeah, please, thank you so much for coming, Alex, at the shortest notice we've ever had.
That's me. I know Star Trek so well. If you need a 3-hour notice guest, I'm your guy. I'll be there.
That's great. That's what we need. You know what? We've got plenty of Voyager to keep going through. So
exactly. Don't worry, Olivia. I'm going to come back for every Voyager episode, and I'm going to tell you something new that's just going to destroy you every single time.
I honestly just think this is the only relationship I'll have with Voyager, so I'm grateful.
Until next time, folks, don't use a Bolian publisher. Don't.
Yeah.
Good advice.
They're assholes. Don't do it.
That guy sucked.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.